This is Common Sense Radio. Straightforward and no excuses.
All right. Come on now.
This is the Steve Gruber Show.
Call me crazy.
Ooh, yeah.
What I said was perfectly right and spot on accurate.
Boy's got a mouth like a cannon, always shooting it all.
Stop. Yeah, stop. I mean, you're way off script.
Got it in me. Gonna quit until it all comes out.
Hey, boy.
Yeah, you know, it's not cynical, it's common sense.
Pay attention to me when I'm talking to you.
I'm gonna rock the nation. Rock the nation.
Genuine, accountable, and raw. Here is Steve Gruber.
Six after on this Thursday. Glad to have you on board as we head towards the 4th of July holiday weekend. And something happened last night that could have great impact on you and I going forward for years to come. In an embarrassingly easy vote, we got bipartisan support on a bailout for Puerto Rico, $72 billion in debt. An island that used to be prosperous and wealthy until the expansion of welfare and social programs that have taken it from a place where 90% of the people worked to a place where about 40% of the people work, a place where they have no chance of paying their debts. And the United States Senate last night passed the bill, sent it on to Barack Obama, who will certainly sign it. The big problem, however, being Illinois, California, New York, and other states that have squandered their financial resources, spent far more than they ever had, made promises they couldn't keep with your money, by the way, and future money that you might make. And now it goes forward. I find it appalling, frankly. Why can we not let some of these places just go bankrupt and go through the process of restructuring properly? Why can we not do this? Why do we have bankruptcy laws if we don't follow them? Too big to fail, is that what I'm told? My next guest, Congressman Tim Walberg. Congressman, welcome to the program.
Good morning. Good to be with you.
So tell me about this Puerto Rico deal.
Well, we wrestled with it in the House, and you're probably aware I voted against the Puerto Rico bill. Not because it was a bailout, because it was structured to not be a bailout, but a restructuring like they're doing with the Detroit school system and other places now with basically emergency manager type approach. But for the same reasons as you've mentioned, we have states like Illinois, we have states like California that will be pressuring for the federal government to help. And when we do things like this, no matter how carefully, allegedly, it was structured, and I don't think it met all of the tests, and that's why I voted against it. But nonetheless, it will give more pressure for us to take care of those type of states and those situations because we've done this. And why wouldn't we do this for our own country, our own states that have had problems that we must get them out of, when in fact we ought to be saying to them, listen, Illinois, California, it is United States of America, but you are separate, equal, diverse states that are truly on your own, and you ought to make decisions that affect your people in positive ways as opposed to bankrupt them. So I
now,
think
I don't know that anybody believes that anymore, though.
Yeah, no matter what promises have been made. What promises have made, ultimately, we're gonna have to wrestle with that. And frankly, those of us that believe that we ought to let the chips fall where they may, and these states, they're making terrible, terrible decisions, it is going to be a battle.
It's going to be a battle that we're going to ultimately lose because the precedent has now been set. We have a bunch of, you know, let's be honest, the whole damn country is being run by leftists at this point, whether it's those that are being appointed by the president to sit as judges, those that are running. It doesn't matter if they call themselves Republicans or Democrats. I mean, these guys, the only place we can get bipartisan support is squandering taxpayer dollars, apparently.
Well, it is a battle, that's for sure. And we've had now almost 8 years of an administration that, frankly, doesn't care what the law says or the Constitution. They're going to do it their own way. But remember, you and I have talked about it now for about 6 years. the fact that this president was trained well by Saul Alinsky, and the rules of a radical have been fully enforced. And every week we see new crises that we have to deal with, and that's one of the key issues that or key points in the rules of a radical keep people in crisis, and you get them off their feet, and you can move directions that they would never have allowed to move before. And we've had that going on in so many ways, so whether it be...
Well, let me ask you about this, speaking about sort of... You know, let me ask you about this. Puerto Rico, I mean, that's a bad deal, I think, for America going forward. But yesterday, I saw Justin Trudeau, the Prime Minister of Canada, and the Mexican President Barack Obama stand up there and tell us that we need a North American trade zone, that we need clean and efficient transportation, protect nature. We need scientific understanding. But here are the things that really concerned me. We need integrated, competitive North America, advanced economic integration. These are the things that were being said from the podium. To me, it sounds like a more of an American Union, similar to the European Union. It seems to me the globalists, including our own president, have not gotten the message.
Well, that's why Brexit is a good thing. It shows for us vivid, full-color illustration that people yearn down at their basic desires to be free and independent. And I think that's a call to America to reignite that viewpoint again, to make sure that this globalism that President Barack Obama and his administration has been pushing for almost 8 years now, that we do the blocking and tackling necessary to get past these next 5 months, get this out of our system, go on in a unified way to put a administration, but more importantly, a Congress in place that will reassert its powers of American nationalism that has all of the best intentions for freedom, for this country and its citizens to succeed, go on, and do doggone what they want to do as free people.
Well, I agree with that. I just wonder if we have a chance, because so many people are asleep. I mean, walk around and talk to people about politics and so forth. They're just asleep out there.
We're up. I hope I am with all of the town halls I do. It's tough. I mean, we've had an awful lot of years that we've been training people to, in some ways, be sheep and expect government to take care of them. It's not working, and that's why I think people are really, really up in arms right now. We're not happy. We're frustrated. We're confused. We're bitter. We're angry, and that's just my family. And it goes across the board, and maybe this is the time we can unite as freedom-loving Americans, those of us who are, and I still think the majority are. We just have to have leaders who appoint that way, and doggone it, let's work together to do that.
All right, well, hold that thought right there, Congressman. Hold that thought right there. We're going to work ourselves for the break here, because I got some other stuff I want to talk about. As soon as we get back, I want to talk about some things that about who's going to run for president, about who's going to be the next president, because I noticed there that you pivoted to say, well, we need to take care of Congress. I think that there's a tell there in that comment. This is Thursday here on the program. The hotline number, 888-900-9966, 888-900-9966. The brand new SteveGruber.com will be up and running very soon. I'm looking forward to it, and so are you, even if you don't know it. Trust me on this. You're going to love it. And all its resources and all the things it has for you specifically. It's Thursday on the Steve Gruber Show.
Keeping you in touch with Michigan and the world.
All right, welcome back to it. It's 18 after. I want to read you something here. Hank Paulson, Richard Armitage, Brent Scowcroft, Tony Fratto, and others, all former members of Bush administrations, both President 41 and President 43, all openly supporting Hillary Clinton, saying that, you know, that's the way they have to go. And you know what I say when I hear that? I just go, you guys are obviously part of the problem and not the solution. You guys are obviously more interested in the elitists program, the globalists, the Remain campaign, if you will. How can somebody, when you know exactly what would happen, which would be the Supreme Court justices that would be selected, that would eviscerate the Second Amendment and the first not far behind, that would raise taxes and further divide America, pitting American against American in class warfare on financial and social divides, because that's how this works with the president we currently have, and it's how it would work with the Hillary Clinton administration. And yet these alleged Republicans, alleged conservatives, are more willing to throw us to the wolves than let somebody that's not part of the establishment elite step in. We are with Congressman Tim Walberg this morning. Congressman, I find it bizarre, frankly, that I see all these Republicans saying, I'm voting for Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, when you mention a guy like Hank Paulson's name, I can fully understand that he's supporting Hillary. Old Goldman Sachs CEO, the guy responsible for TARP that I voted against, the Wall Street bailout back in 2008, a guy that is only known for protecting his wallet, doesn't have an American urge of true free enterprise capitalism that allows all boats to rise. This guy wanted his own boat to rise, and Hillary will be the best for him because, frankly, she works with best with those people who support her financially in a campaign. So, again, that has to force those of us who are true American ideal-loving Americans who understand that freedom works best with risk included with it, and you bear the brunt of the risks you take. But we don't stand in your way of getting up and moving on again, and we don't make special rules for you. We've got to stand together and push back against the politicization that's going on from the leftists against common-sense Americans that are doing what they're doing right now because they fear that the America they love is going away. And that's why, as they attempt to get us in a crisis, let's push back on that and keep our eyes narrowed toward a goal of saying America's people will unite again in such a way that we control what's going on and it's not the top-down management of government that takes place.
Yeah, I feel the people are asleep. I don't know how we get there. I talk to people every day, as do you. It is incredible to me the general across-the-board ignorance of people that just think they know things about what has happened or what's going on with the past or this or that, and they know so little about so much. They're dangerous, but they're completely ill-informed.
Responsibility to consistently keep going at it, not get frustrated to the point of giving up. I mean, we'll be frustrated, but we have to push forward. And so when I'm talking about what's going on in our coming elections, I keep reminding people that, number one, the president works for the people. That's how it was arranged. And don't forget that. That's still a capability that we can achieve. So your vote for members of Congress is probably more important than your vote for president, because I don't work for the president, whether he's Democrat or Republican. I work for the people of the 7th District. The president does not employ us. He is hired by us, or she is hired by us. And so which arrangement will work best? That's why I contend you put Hillary in place, you again take the Article 1 powers of the Constitution away from the people, that being the people's house, because for 8 years now, the Democrats under Harry Reid have been willing to let this president have a pass to walk all over us and have forced the House to even go to court, as we found out last week with the decision where the Supreme Court stood with us, where we pushed back against his executive order on illegal amnesty. But that's a tough way to go, and it took years. So think very carefully as we move forward that you've got to have arrangement where you have a president who will be pushed back on by both parties, if necessary, to control the rapid overreach of the executive branch. We do not want a monarch. We do not want a dictator. We want a representative government. And that's what I'm telling people. So don't lose hope. That can take place. That comes by a simple vote at the ballot box with common sense of saying the American ideal worked. Bernie Sanders is wrong, of course. Socialism never worked. At least he's honest about what he believes.
It always fails.
Pardon?
It always fails. Puerto Rico, Venezuela, it doesn't matter where you go. It always fails.
Yeah.
You know, I'll give you the last word. I'll tell you what, I'll give you the last word, being mindful of the 4th of July weekend.
Well, the 4th of July weekend is a reminder that there is an idea that does work. And again, it comes by people that are willing to understand that they have incredible forces against them, but with the strength of right on their side, clear thinking, common sense, ability to sacrifice for ultimately freedom and the victory, we win. We can do it again. We can do it again. We've got all the tools to do it. Let's not give up. And thank God for those that have gone before us who are willing to make that same sacrifice. They won. We will too.
Well, there you go. All right. Congressman Tim Walberg, you have a terrific 4th of July Independence Day weekend, and thanks for stopping in, as always.
Thank you. And we'll look forward to being out and about, enjoying the parades and everything else that goes on with a great country.
There you go. Congressman Tim Walberg, everybody, on a Thursday here on the program, headed for the 4th of July weekend. It's going to be a good one. Looks like the weather's going to be just about perfect across it. Although, check locally, a lot of burn bans in effect now. So private fireworks, your fireworks, might not be allowed. And if you set something on fire, it is your bill. And fairly so. It's the Steve Gerber Show.
Michigan, born and raised with Midwestern values and Michigan common sense.
Remember when they used to say it was a free country, do whatever you want? You don't hear that much anymore, do you? It's a free country, you do whatever you want. Well, you know, not so much anymore, because if you think inappropriately, they'll try to bring the RICO statutes against you if you don't believe in their scientific theory. If you say something else, they'll accuse you of hate speech. The control is getting wider. They're listening. You have no privacy. The taxes are pretty incredible. They want to control the light bulbs you use, how much water you use when you flush the toilet, and how about just tax on sugar? Why don't we just put a tax on sugar, which in effect is what's happened with, you know, taxes on sugary drinks. Our next guest is, you know, well heard all over this country, more than 100 radio shows a year. He's on CNN and Fox and all over. And Jeff Steyer is a senior fellow at the National Center for Public Policy Research in Washington, D.C. Jeff, welcome to the program.
Good to be back with you, Steve. And your explanation was excellent, although people might think you were exaggerating with this sugar tax. In fact, you understated the problem. You see, in Philadelphia a week and a half ago, in this soda tax that everyone's talking about, it's not just a soda tax. It's a tax on non-sugary drinks. So it's not just taxing sugar in soda that may cause obesity and diabetes, and we can get into that conversation and the science or non-science behind the idea of the tax. But they've even passed a tax, get this, on diet soda. So if anyone still thought that these taxes on soda, sugary drinks, or about public health, forget it. Even the mayor of Philadelphia has conceded that this was simply a money grab. And if you're grabbing money for Coke, you may as well grab money for Diet Coke, too.
Well, sure, why not? Let's just go ahead and do that. Here's where I get confused. On the sugary part of it, if I may, Jeff, if I'm not mistaken, we, you and I, the taxpayers and everybody else, we subsidize, to begin with, high fructose corn syrup. Right? We subsidize it through our farm bills and so forth, and Senator Debbie Stabenow from Michigan, who wrote the farm bill, we subsidize corn farmers and high fructose corn syrup, and then we turn around and penalize those that use it, that being the consumer, by taxing it in many ways. Am I following the money correctly?
That's quite a racket the government's got going there.
It is. They take your money, they take your money to create the product, and then when you use the product, they take your money again. It is incredible, and it's part of this whole control system, Jeff. I don't know. It's quite a racket, to say the least, and it seems to me that every day it gets worse.
It reminds me of the Stephen Wright joke. It's a penny for your thoughts, but you always have to put your 2 cents in. Someone's making a penny there.
I do remember that. All right, so here's my question. This regulation nation is right down to the mud puddles in your driveway, the sugar tax, the luxury tax, a death tax, you know, tax on your electricity, tax on your consumption, tax on water, for God's sake, in some places. where does it end? Because my problem, Jeff, is that most people walking around out there are asleep, or half of them are getting checks from the government, so they don't really care anyway. They're like, well, you know, I'll just get my government check and pay the government bill. It's this vicious little cycle, and the people that are left holding the real bill are you and I and other folks that go to work every day.
Well, that's true, but the really sad thing about the soda tax, the one that was just passed in Philadelphia, and is now being used as a model for legislative efforts around the country, because Philadelphia was the first major American city to pass a soda tax. There was already one in place in Berkeley, California, but I wouldn't want to use them as an example for other cities or other rational cities. But the Philadelphia soda tax, which is being used as a model, is really troubling because it is not only a money grab, but it is, especially from the left that pushed this, it is a regressive tax. It is a tax that will not only take money away from people like you and me who would enjoy soda, you know, maybe we could afford it, but it is a regressive tax. It will hurt poorest people the most. And it's got this paternalistic approach to it because they know they're targeting poor people, but that's really where it's going to hit people the most, people who can least afford it. And then they say, well, you know, these are the people who the tax will be most effective for. It's the biggest percentage of their income rather than yours. So for them, it's going to change their behavior. And they're the ones whose behavior we want to change. These poor people can't make their own decisions, so they need the government to nudge them into making so-called better choices. So it's a very paternalistic approach that preys on those in society who least have disposable income and who the government thinks it can bully by just taxing them a bit more, we can change their behavior.
So how long then, Jeff, until we see the potato chip, the Dorito tax, if you will? When is that coming down the pipe? And furthermore, shouldn't we be taxing Coca-Cola and the bottlers and manufacturers of these products and Frito-Lay when they run television commercials? Maybe they should be taxed for the television commercials that they run to promote these products that we should be taxing, because the potato chip tax couldn't be that far behind.
No, I know your show is listened to wide and far. You may have just given someone an idea
on the other side.
The idea behind it, you know, forget about the potato chip tax. They're already taxing the diet sodas. So, yeah, potato chips wouldn't be that much of a stretch if it's got fat in it. You know, why not a steak tax? Why not a I said it. Okay, a steak tax. If you want to tax meat in the United States, you just need to look at your friends on the left in Europe, who have already been pushing through the World Health Organization, through efforts at ending climate change. You want a meat tax, they argue, because meat, get this, meat is not a sustainable form of protein, right? They'd rather us be eating tofu. And because meat has a bigger, allegedly has a bigger carbon footprint than soy, then we need to... And then they like using terms that economists like me tend to use. They need to internalize the externality. They need to impose the cost of global warming on the people who cause it, meat eaters, and put in a tax on meat because meat apparently has a larger global footprint. This is not some made-up fantasy. This is actually stuff that they have been talking about, for instance, in the Paris Climate Change Agreements. This is real ideas out there, especially in Europe, that they're trying to push on us here in the United States. And we could argue about the science
meat
as to whether... A meat tax, yeah.
You know, there are a few things that really truly frighten me these days.
I'm sorry, say it again.
But I think you just did it for me, Jeff. I think you just frightened me for the first time today. I hear so much, but I think you finally did it. I'm going to give you 20 seconds for the last word, but we're going to have you back to talk about the meat tax and climate change and the nonsense involved. 20 seconds for the last word, my friend.
Well, I think there's a general theme here that the public health community no longer uses public health to drive public health approaches. It's all about big government making decisions for people, whether it's about global climate change, whether it's about soda taxes, whether it's about e-cigarettes, you name the topic, it's all about the government making better decisions than individuals can. I think they've got it all wrong.
Wow. Jeff Steyer, Senior Fellow at the National Center for Public Policy Research. Great topic. I'm going to go barbecue a steak anyway. Thank you.
Delivering Michigan common sense with a big dose of truth and honesty.
All right, welcome back to it. It is Thursday here on the program, heading into the 4th of July weekend. And make no mistake, you will be expected to be on your best behavior, because if you're not, somebody, the boys and girls in blue, might not take a liking to the way you behave. Especially, here's one for you. At Torch Lake, don't mess around on the sandbar. I mean, you can have all the fun you want, you know, within reason. It's summer, it's sunny, it's sandy, it's wonderful, within reason. Have some manners if you don't mind. You're in public. And if you don't want to have manners, and if you want to get all liquored up and operate a boat, things might not go that well for you. If you want to get all liquored up and drive a motor vehicle, it might not go all that well for you. There I am. I'm laying it down for you. Have a good time, use your head, and mind your manners. Our next guest, First Lieutenant Gabe Covey from the Michigan State Police Emergency Management and Homeland Security Division. And I think that, well, first of all, welcome to the program.
Hey, Steve. Thanks so much for having me on, and some great points that you made right off the bat here. If you follow those rules, I think you're going to be just fine. But I could add to that a little bit.
Okay, well, that's why you're here, my friend. Have at it.
Yeah, well, you know, a lot of people are going to be traveling over the 4th, families, individuals, taking extended vacations. I'd just like to talk to folks a little bit about kind of preparing in advance for all types of emergencies. Maybe it's weather-related, maybe it's man-made, but, you know, a little bit of planning to be a lifesaver if a disaster strikes while you're away from home.
Well, let's talk about some specific things. Obviously, alcohol and motor vehicles of any sort don't mix well. I mean, that's pretty obvious. And I'm sure this weekend you'll have extra patrols on the road, yes?
Yeah, you know, yes, we'll have extra enforcement members out there making sure people are hopefully behaving themselves. But some of the things that I'd like to talk about are just, you know, maybe before your trip, having some plans in motion, some foreshadowing in case bad weather comes in or something happens. Maybe your vehicle breaks down while you're traveling. And I'd like to recommend that folks, you know, maybe have a little or prepare a little travel size emergency preparedness kit that could be with water in it, some snacks, maybe a flashlight, an extra battery or two for your cell phone or cell phone charger, you know, extra stuff just in case, man, you know, your car breaks down, or maybe there's something that has closed the road for a while, or you're sitting there for a long period of time, stuff like that. I just want people thinking outside the box a little bit.
Well, and I want to take that to the next level. Obviously, it's going to be a big boating weekend across Michigan. Michigan has the second largest number of registered boats, second only to Florida. So we have a lot of boats out there. Your boat can break down and be drifting across the lake, too. Don't be the guy that they're talking about on the 11 o'clock news because you're drifting across Lake Michigan because you didn't have a radio.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, maybe a little hand crank flashlight, like I say, cell phone charger, making sure you've got some folks that know where you are, or you've talked with somebody. You know, everyone today relies so heavily on their cell phones. Well, what if your cell phone gets wet? Or what if it breaks or something? I mean, I've policed accidents where people are going to call somebody, but they can't find their phone, or it's broken from the car crash or boat crash. Not a bad idea to have some numbers maybe memorized in your head, or maybe a little punch list of, hey, these are my emergency contacts in my wallet in case my phone goes down. You know, you never know. A cell phone tower could get knocked out from severe weather, something like that, that makes your phone inoperable. So what are you going to do now kind of thing is what I would like to put in people's heads before they travel out this weekend.
Good stuff. First Lieutenant Gabe Covey of the Michigan State Police with us. All right. Other places that people could end up in trouble, they head off on a hike into the middle of nowhere. Again, tell people when you're leaving, I would think, and when you expect to be back, because a lot of great trails in Michigan that people can walk off into the wild blue yonder, and maybe there isn't cell service at all to begin with.
And maybe that's the idea. I had a friend of mine last year. He goes camping, and he takes his tent, and he wants to go off the grid a little bit, you know, spotty cell phone coverage. He doesn't check the weather. He doesn't, you know, I'm not saying you got to watch it every hour, but have an idea of what's coming. He gets out there, he sets up his tent, and overnight a huge storm comes through, and trees fall all around him. He's really lucky that he wasn't injured or even killed, but he comes back and says, you know, he's talking about his trip, and I'm like, man, you should have just a couple of little precautionary things, you know. Did you check the weather? Did you check in on your phone just a little bit if you could? Did you have somebody you could call? And did you have enough food or supplies in the event that you get stranded out there or lost, you know, possibly? So
I've never been lost, sir. I was confused once for 3 days on a ridge in Montana, but I've never actually been lost. Just terribly confused for 3 days once. That's all. Terribly confused. Anyhow, yeah. So that's good stuff there. What else you have for us? We got another 30 seconds here before you can give us the last word on it, how to make sure that people have a safe, productive, and fun weekend.
Yeah, you know, just making sure your vehicle's up and running smoothly. Maybe have a mechanic look it over. Check your fluids to make sure you don't break down. You know, when I was a kid, I used to hang out with my grandparents a lot. My grandparents always kept the vehicle, you know, half a tank of gas. Oh, we got to go to the gas station and fill it up. And I thought, man, they must have a lot of time on their hands. But now I realize they were just being prepared. Whereas my mother used to drive us around on what she called angel fumes. I'm surprised we didn't run out of gas more often. But, you know, just being prepared. just stay out in front of that, just in case. So I hope everybody has a safe weekend and has a lot of fun and happy 4th of July.
All right. I greatly appreciate it. Great conversation. Lieutenant Gabe Covey, First Lieutenant of the Michigan State Police. You have a great 4th, my friend.
Thanks a lot for having me, Steve. You have a good one, too. Take care.
There you have it. All right. Yeah, I've never been lost, my friends. Terribly confused for 3 days on a ridge in Montana once when I was younger, but I have never been lost. Just keep that in mind. It is it's Thursday. Remember, tomorrow's Free for All Friday. Free-for-all Friday, the 4th of July. What does it mean to you? Where is America headed? What about liberty in 2016? Just some things to think about for Free-for-all Friday. I'll be right back.